Financial technology, or fintech, is one of the fastest growing industries in the world today, with New York, London, Tel Aviv, Edinburgh, Singapore, Moscow, and other major cities all vying for a piece of the action. Welcome to Breaking Banks, the first dedicated radio show that focuses on how this new boom is changing everything, from the way we bank to the very concept of money itself. Now, here's your host, Brett King.
Okay, welcome back to Breaking Banks this week. We have in the studio today the guys from Bink. We're going to be talking to them in a moment. But before we do, a couple of quick announcements for the start of the show. If you're headed to Austin for South by Southwest, Provoke Media is the media partner for the exclusive FinTech Luminaries VIP reception. Our host, Jason Henricks, he's going to be there. You can ping him on Twitter if you'd like to join the session there. You can also hear Jason speak at South by on Banking Disruption. Tuesday, March 12th from 3:30 to 4:30. Now, in the news today, we have some interesting announcements. Greenlight just raised $16 million for kids' debit cards. Why we're still investing in plastic, I don't know, but we'll get to that. That's a whole different discussion. And Zinja, a digital banking startup in Australia, has started up to to offer home loans in Australia as a startup. So it continues to be some really interesting happenings in the startup space. Asia's moved a little slow this year compared with other regions, but might be time to see China and Australia making a breakout there. Ripple makes some new moves into emerging markets, particularly in India, Brazil, and China. So we are starting to see their platform mature as well. So lots happening in the fintech space as usual, but let's get straight into the show. Today's guest, we have Greg Gormley. He's, what's FCAA, Greg?
A fellow of the Chartered Association of Certified Accountants.
Oh, there you go. Very good. And he has over 20 years' experience operating with large corporates. He started News Corp's technology division, rose to be business development director there, and became the EMEA finance director. He left News Corp for CME TV to be their head of ops and strategy, and he worked with venture capitalists across Eastern Europe in that role. And in 2004, he left to create his own management consultancy and venture capital fund. In 2014, he and Lee Clark co-founded Bink, and that's who we're going to be talking about today. Bink really is looking at redefining the loyalty space around the digital wallet and making life simple and rewarding for all. Included in the team at Bink is Mike Jordan. He has 20 years' experience in the payment card industry at Amex, HSBC, and the CEO of Alpha Card. His experience in JV business management. He's highly active in the European fintech community. He's currently the CCO, the Chief Commercial Officer at Bink. He's responsible for development of the commercialization strategy and building the infrastructure globally, and he spends almost as much time on planes as I do.
Nearly.
Come forward. So, Mike, welcome back.
Thank you so much. Yes.
So tell me, let's start with you. Explain to those who are listening, what is Bink?
Okay. So Bink is really, above all things, is a consumer-centric proposition. And we try and do something really simple. We try and take the loyalty cards, the preferences that we're all interested in as individuals, and they're different for you, they're different for everybody else listening. And what we try and do is we take the friction out of the process. And the way we start this is really by looking at loyalty cards. So on a regular basis, we shop at retailers, we interact with airlines, all different organizations, and they recognize us through our loyalty ID. But the processes around that, and I think Greg will talk about the kind of genesis of the concept in a minute, but the processes around that are a bit old, they're out of date. And as individuals and consumers, we're used to...
Haven't changed in decades.
Not in decades. Yeah. Yeah. And we're used to contactless payment, low friction, in virtue all of our experiences. But for some reason, whilst the loyalty programs have got more sophisticated over time, the way in which we interact with them, what they ask us to do for that reward, for that recognition, is just not changed. So what we've tried to do is create a really simple proposition, which is it doesn't matter what you're interested in. It doesn't matter how you choose to interact with that scheme and pay. We want to take the friction out. And we do it simply by saying, pay whatever method you want, and we will ensure that you never miss out as a consumer. We'll ensure you're recognized.
Very cool. So, Greg, when you and Lee co-founded Bink, what was the evolution of the idea behind Bink? How did you guys get started?
What was the catalyst?
Yeah.
So Lee and I have known each other for about 10 years now, worked together for 8, and we'd finished a project and we're looking for something new to do, and we like being innovative and disruptive. So Lee went shopping with his family. He's got three young girls. They're going away to Portugal for 3 weeks, and he's a man that really doesn't like to shop. So it was under much duress he was pulled across to a Walgreens equivalent. And he agreed to walk around the shop following the girls, carrying the baskets, which he did, for 45 minutes, which is a lifetime for Lee. So he heads to the till, and in the till, in the basket, there's electric toothbrushes, sunglasses, sun creams, a whole raft of products, which equated to about $300. So quite a substantial amount. And the cashier, $300, do you have your loyalty card? So he's there, no, I'm a man, I hate signing up for things, I hate carrying around loads of plastic, yeah. I've got a tiny wallet, but my wife's here, brilliant. Turns to his wife, have you got your Boots Advantage card? She's searching through her handbag, fumbling away, 2 minutes passed. No, other handbag. And he's like, why is it so difficult to get a simple thank you shopping with the brands you love, and you still have to carry in this digital world a plastic loyalty card, which seems bizarre. So really, it's a case of coming back to me saying, telling me this whole story and saying, why can't we be identified in some other frictionless way, something simple, something that we carry all the time, like our payment card? Why can't we be identified via that? And really, that was the sort of birth of a deep data dive of myself. As you said earlier, I'm an accountant by training, and went away for a week, did this whole deep dive about loyalty and how it started and what it's about. And it was really kicked off, certainly in the UK, in 1995 with Tesco, with Clive and Edwina, who formed Dunnhumby. And they invented...
Yeah, that's a very interesting story, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they went to Lord McCauley, and within 3 months, he turned around and said, you've learned more about my customers than I've known in the past 10 years. So, which is an amazing story. And Dunnhumby was launched, which is obviously the huge Goliath which it is today. But in essence, nothing's really changed since that date. We've had, within the UK, the launch of Nectar, which is another large program, but there's still fundamentally the problem of having to carry around this plastic card. And the loyalty market is a $100 billion market. It's worth more than film and music put together, which is a huge thing. But in the UK, there's 8 million people now that do not collect loyalty that did a year ago. And that is purely because they just can't be bothered. The friction is too much. The equation of effort versus reward is wrong. And that's the equation we want to reverse. You know, it's one of those things that we look at on a daily basis. We shop daily. We may join loyalty programs, but soon we have this drop-off. And there's all these changes of experiences of how we pay now as well, and the self-scan checkouts, and all these differences that causes this urgency for us to rush through the till. And to fumble around for a plastic loyalty card is bizarre. Now, I know in the US there is the issue where you can actually give your mobile phone number, which a lot of people don't want to read out loud, so that's an issue there. You can sometimes type it into the chip and PIN machine, but effectively, I've sat there.
Depends on who the retailer is.
It depends on the retailer. And I've sat there before. Both Mike and I have sat behind in a queue, and this guy couldn't remember his number. He was going to save about $10, so he really wanted to get his number right. And literally after about 4 minutes, he realized he'd typed the very first number he tried in wrong. So it's, again, this friction that causes a lot of problems, a lot of issues, and we want to change this whole digital engagement. So for us, you know, plastic is another problem as well environmentally. There's 3.3 billion plastic loyalty cards in the US alone. That's the height of 27 Mount Everest, just to give it some concept.
That's crazy.
It's absolutely mad. And the other thing about the plastic that they use, it takes 450 years to biodegrade. So if it's not recycled properly, that's 18 generations that it's going to be around for. In the landfill.
But in the meantime, the barcode's worn off and the Mac stripe's worn off, and so you've got this dead piece of plastic.
Yeah. And, you know, stupid things like call centres, they get inundated with either I've lost my loyalty card, or here's a change of address, etc. So there's all these sort of friction points throughout the whole journey. And we really want to reverse and change that.
I wonder how many people bother to call, apart from maybe airline programs, how many people bother to call their loyalty program provider and change their address?
Yeah, well, that's again another problem that we're looking to resolve simply.
Very interesting. You know, different loyalty programs treat customers very, very differently. There's no sort of one size fits all from a design perspective. I learned this when I was working with Cathay, the airline, Cathay Pacific, in Hong Kong. You know, they have two broad programs. They have Asia Miles, and then they have the Marco Polo Club. right? And so Asia Miles, you know, even though they're the same points program in terms of the collection capability, but Asia Miles loyalty adherents, members of that program, they were only focused on getting enough miles to fly free, right? The Marco Polo Club members were all about the benefits that they get, you know, shorter queuing at the airports and so forth. So even from the perspective of different loyalty programs, the outcomes and so forth are very different. So from a design perspective, how have you guys thought about that in respect to sort of, I guess, being an aggregator of loyalty programs? Is that how we would describe you?
Exactly that. And I think the way we aggregate is via an app. So we have Bink, which is a very simple app, which takes a tokenization of your payment cards. So every time you use your payment cards, you can be identified just by spending in
store. So you don't have to worry about entering numbers, things like that.
You don't have to worry about entering any numbers. You don't have to worry about handing over a card. And in fact, we've even developed ways where you can be identified before the EMV transaction goes through.
Right. So when you walk in the store, for example.
Well, not quite there. We're not quite up with Amazon yet.
Okay.
But certainly when you're stood at the queue, you're there. When you actually push in your payment card into the chip and PIN machine, you can be identified before you've done anything else. It's just a simple push into the chip and PIN machine. You can be identified, which enables retailers to give discounts, member pricing, etc. And it just means that this whole frictionless journey can apply, whether it's either pre-tender or post-tender loyalty programs, which leads on to your point about different loyalty programs offer different things for different people.
So can you describe to me, you describe Lee's process, walking into Boots and collecting this. So how would he do that today using Bink?
So the simple thing today, we do three pieces of core utility. So we have our app, which shows storing loyalty cards. So it stores all your loyalty cards on your mobile phone, so you simply have them with you. The second thing it does is it views. So you can actually view all your points balances aggregated. You're not having to log in either on different websites or looking at different apps for a whole load of different retailers. You have everything in one place, which is shown for you with all the transaction history as well. And the key thing that's our key differentiator, which is happening all this year, is the linking. So it's linking all of your payment cards, as many as you have. We've got one user with 17 payment cards on his app, which is quite interesting. So every time you use your payment card, you can be identified in all the stores that we're gradually linking into this year. So this is our key year of execution with all the retailers, which will be kicking off in the next sort of 4 weeks.
So how do you guys get the data, the points and transaction data? Are you guys screen scraping, or what's the technology behind it?
So interestingly, the technology is very much, and this is where we're collaborative, and we're utilizing companies all throughout the marketplace. So we work very closely with the schemes.
Yep.
And that's all the schemes within the UK, and actually also schemes over in the US as well that we're talking to extend the reach. And it means that every time that payment card is used, we actually get an auth feed straight away. So we know as soon as that payment card is used, get the auth feed, add the loyalty ID, and basically pass that back to the retailer. And that's
so the same
fundamental
way that payments card networks work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's
exactly the same.
Yeah, we're removing the process of actually handing over the plastic loyalty card and having that swiped. So that saves time at the till. So it's a great retailer benefit. And it means that in this world of FOMO, fear of missing out, you never miss out.
Hmm. So, you know, I'm a big fan of what they call first principles thinking. I don't know if you guys are familiar with this from a design methodology perspective, but a good illustration of this is SpaceX. What they've recently done with, you know, the cost of, you know, getting a kilogram of stuff into orbit. So right now, which is really, really interesting, is the Falcon Heavy, which just launched a few weeks ago, launched Starman into orbit, you know, to big fanfare. They can get 64 tons of stuff into orbit. Now, that's $90 million for a launch of the Falcon Heavy. The NASA equivalent, which they're still working on, is called the SLS, the Space Launch System. When it is completed, it's 3 years behind right now, but it's going to be able to send 70 tons into orbit. That's 6 tons more, $1 billion per launch, 10 times the cost. So this is a great example of what we call first principles thinking. Elon Musk started the process of designing SpaceX rockets from the ground up in a very different way from NASA, which had iterated on the Apollo rocket program and the space shuttle system and so forth. So when we look at loyalty programs, when we look at the industry that obviously, you know, Breaking Banks is about, the financial services industry, a lot of these programs, a lot of the stuff that we're talking about that we use every day these days, like loyalty cards, like payment cards in banking, like credit cards and so forth, have simply been adapted from the branch-based world or the physical retail space to the digital space by just slapping it on an app, right? Whereas I think the real opportunity is to say, if we were going to redesign how you did banking, or if we were going to rethink the way loyalty should be instantiated in today's world, in this real-time world, and you started from scratch, you wouldn't have a plastic card at all.
No,
right?
Not at all.
And so using that thinking, how do you guys see, from a first principles design perspective, what is loyalty going to be like in, say, 5 or 10 years' time as a result of the sort of technologies that we're seeing coming into the space?
I think you're absolutely right. People are used to very iterative changes in loyalty. And I think some of the previous iterations you've seen is people creating coalition schemes. So they've said, okay, you know, you get your gas here, you go supermarket shopping somewhere else, and we'll reward you. And I think the truth of the matter is, when you look at that from a first principles perspective, what you're fundamentally forgetting is consumer preference.
Right.
Loyalty is nothing more than recognition of you as an individual, your service, and also your preference. So what we look to do with Bink is we look to say, we're not prescriptive about where you want to shop, what your interests are. We're not prescriptive about how you choose to pay. And we do recognize the intrinsic value within the existing loyalty schemes. And what we therefore try and do, as you say, so the immediate thing is, well, you can just take the plastic away. But taking the plastic away is really the first step. What you're doing is you're saying, as an individual, I can build a stack of preference. I can fly on this airline. I can stay at this hotel. I can like this retailer. And as I build up this stack of preference, I can then use that myself to ensure that I don't miss out, because it's linked wherever I shop, whatever I do. But in the future, I can start use that stack of preference to work for me. So we always position ourselves as a consumer champion. We're with the retailers you want, the schemes you want, whenever you want. But if you imagine a future way of engaging with brands, with service providers, we are seeing now an evolution where we are handing over more and more authority to agent-driven models.
Right.
And actually, these brands are becoming a little bit disintermediated, because we will be expressing our desires at a high level via an agent model. So let's take that a step.
Like what? Like an Amazon Alexa?
Like an Alexa. Like an Alexa. So if we look at Alexa skills and how they grow, if you project maybe another 18 months, I may well be saying to my Alexa, look, I need to go from London to New York next week. I want to go on Thursday. I want to come back on Saturday. Now, what that's not taking in is it's not taking in all of my preference and my recognition. I could imagine a world...
Which airlines you typically fly on, which you've got preferential status on.
Exactly right.
Where you're likely to get an upgrade.
Quite right. I mean, I could be sitting, you know, in the aisle, and I like to sit by the window. I could be, you know, presented with offers for hotels that actually I don't have a preference for. I could imagine a situation where over time we've built up at Bink, or you've entrusted as a consumer us to look up, make sure you never miss out, and you've curated that stack of preference. So what you actually say to Alexa is, can you Bink me a flight to New York next week? And what it then does is it then pulls in the fact that, yeah, I fly with British Airways, and I like seat 61K because it's in a certain place on the plane. And it also knows...
Isn't it sad that he knows?
He knows the upstairs, yeah.
And what's even sadder is I know where that seat is on a BA flight.
By individual route.
Yes. Yeah.
And it also then knows the fact you like to stay at Starwood Properties. So what you get back as a consumer is you're recognized. And because you're recognized and because you have loyalty, you're rewarded. Yeah. So I think... what we do is, the current view of it is, yeah, we take out friction. We accept that loyalty schemes have almost universal appeal, because they're a bit like, you know, Bezos's books at Amazon. There's a book about anything, so everybody likes a book. There's a loyalty scheme about pretty much anything, so everybody likes a loyalty scheme. We just take out all of the friction, all the friction points digitally, but in the future, we'll really use that for your benefit.
So let me take that one step further. Sure. Then, is you talked about consumer preference.
Sure.
But do you think that the contextual nature of loyalty could move preferences more efficiently? Because that's ultimately, you know, what a loyalty program scheme would want, is that you would change your preferences because now you've got attached this loyalty program. So, for example, if I walked into a store, you know, or if I book a flight on my credit card, then the next offer I get for a hotel, which, you know, now increasingly the airlines are doing this, hey, you know, don't forget to get a lift. Sure. To the airport, or, you know, have you got a hotel booked. Yep. For New York yet? So in that process, you know, how do you think loyalty schemas like this, or the contextual element, may be able to change my behavior as a consumer, shift my loyalty?
Yeah, I think that's definitely something that all the retailers are looking at working upon. And actually, very simply, the benefit of that will be the consumers. So they'll get more and more offers that are relevant to them, more bespoke. And that's partly what Bink is doing, because we're also enabling 100% of data to be fed back to the shops that you actually deal with and the retailers that you deal with. So actually they can offer you something that's much more bespoke, much more compelling for you as an individual. So all of a sudden, these loyalty programs can actually be a lot more advanced from what they are today, give something that's much more relevant, and even look at something like the millennials, where they want actually more instant gratification straight away. They also are very socially aware, so they want to give back. So some of the programs like Co-op, etc., are becoming a lot more advanced. And then it's feeding that information back, which you can actually do in an effective real-time manner as well. So as soon as you spent something in a store, you can actually be given information back saying, right, you know, thanks very much for spending. Here's a benefit for you, but also here's a benefit for your community. So all of a sudden, there's all these advancements in programs that are happening. And to be honest, it's throughout the world. I mean, loyalty is in every single country that we've looked at. I mean, we cannot find a country where loyalty doesn't exist. Mm. And really, loyalty is this generic word. It's actually about engagement with your consumer. And that's really what it is. It's about how you engage with that consumer, how you make it more compelling for them to either spend more with you or come into your store more often, or just come to your website more often, etc. So it is very much a case about how the consumer will win in the future, and actually how these programs will advance. And it will come down to some smart people, and it will just progress and progress and progress. And we're looking at different things about suggesting to retailers, for example, silly things like meal deals, where people go in. People don't swipe loyalty cards for meal deals. They think it's not worth it. So that data is lost. So you don't know where either someone works or how often they're in your store, etc. So even doing things like, if they come in for 4 days, fifth day they come to pay. Oh no, it's free, it's on us. You know, how good would that be as a loyalty program? And you go, right, okay, well, I'm going to go and have lunch there every day. Because you know that you're being recognized and being rewarded. So these advancements of just points, you know, that is the older generation, and that is all going to change as well. And that's something that we hope to drive.
I can still remember being in Hong Kong and going into a Starbucks. And I used to go to the same Starbucks every morning, right? And, you know, just as a lark, I said to the barista behind the counter, she said, good morning, good to see you again. What will you have this morning? I said, the usual, right? And, you know, her face went ashen, you know, she's like, oh, look, I'm really sorry. I can't remember what your usual coffee is. But then she turned it into a really good service, you know, opportunity, because she said, I tell you what I'm going to do. Tell me what you want this morning, and I'm going to give you your coffee for free.
Brilliant.
Right? And then she said, and anytime I forget your order after this, you can have it free again.
Right? Fantastic.
Which was really exceptional service. I haven't had it at any other Starbucks necessarily, but this ensured that, you know, they sort of locked in my loyalty, even though the coffee wasn't greatest, but this is Hong Kong. It's a pretty decent coffee given Hong Kong. Anyway. That's another story. But do you see there's an element of design here where part of your role is actually helping retailers, helping the schemas start thinking about different design elements of loyalty?
Absolutely. And again, I think the key thing about us is we're very collaborative. We are actually a platform. So, you know, at the end of the day, the retailers can interact with us as strongly as they like. And then we're looking at how we can actually increase the relationship between both the consumer and the retailer. And for us, that's a really important point. It comes back to our premise of being consumer champion.
Very cool. So just before we go to a break, I do want to ask you a little bit about the data side of this. Obviously, in the EU, we've moved to this new general data protection regulation, GDPR. We have in the financial services space, open banking initiative, which has opened up access to data. So there's a lot of stuff happening around data right now. So when it comes to the data of consumers or data in respect to their spending and so forth, how's that environment changing? How does that impact your business model and potentially where this goes?
Yeah, so I mean, there's particularly in the European context, there's been a lot of emerging regulation that's being enacted now. GDPR is a perfect example of where, in fact, many retailers are struggling to communicate with their consumers because of the ways they've historically captured data. And when you look at the heart of GDPR, what it really is doing is it's empowering the consumer to take control over their data and their data choices. And I think that in particular is pretty much exactly at the core of what we're doing at Bink. So when we talk to a lot of retailers, they actually see us as a fabulous tool in terms of how they re-engage with customers that may have lapsed because of the regulatory consequence. And I think when you look at the way in which we're able to rapidly and easily identify and enroll people into new loyalty schemes, sometimes in life you have good timing. That's really good timing. That's really good timing on the GDPR side. You touched upon banks as well. So if you look at a European landscape again, there's a couple of things that have happened. Open banking PSD2, what you're seeing there is the ability in other banks to aggregate data from one account or third-party organizations to act in your interest. And there's probably two conclusions there. You mentioned earlier, actually, we aggregate loyalty data. And I think that's important. People are becoming more and more expectant of being able to see appropriate and relevant data clustered together. So we do that on the loyalty scheme side. But interestingly, and something we haven't really touched on so far, is we're partnering with banks. And the reason we partner with banks and they really want to work with us is they are looking at ways in which they can create a much richer and broader engagement with their customers. And by putting our capability at the core of their mobile offering, what they're doing is they're looking to drive stickiness to their mobile banking environments. So for us, when we look at GDPR, we think we're very well timed to help consumers and retailers kind of coexist and manage data for consumer benefit. And with open banking and PSD2, what we're doing is we're broadening out that context of aggregation. And particularly when we talk to the big banks in the UK, they're excited by the fact that your mobile banking environment can be more than just your financial transactions. It can be the value that's also associated with them.
Yeah, you know, you look at someone like Dunnhumby and the amount of data they have on you, if you're a regular shopper at any of the retailers they work with, just absolutely phenomenal, behavioral and so forth. I mean, how do you even communicate to a customer what you know about them?
Well, I think you can tell as a consumer when it's not being used to your advantage.
Right.
So I think, you know, there's a couple of premises, and the first premise of Bink is you don't miss out. Now, all of us will have received email boxes spammed full of things which have literally no relevance to us.
Yeah, of course.
And that's not a great experience. Yeah. Sifting through 100 offers to find the one that actually really meant something to you. I think what we're able to do is we're able to help make sure that the insights are more accurate and more specific. But moreover, we actually give the retailers the channel in which to give you the right offer. That ability to do that on a one-to-one basis is, whether at the moment that's through a mobile, in the future it won't be. But that's what we'll expect. If you look at the way human interaction will be with technology and it will become more embedded, could you imagine that environment if 90% of what you're receiving is irrelevant?
Yeah.
That wouldn't work.
Yeah, you take augmented reality head-up display with all these
exactly
offers
right.
in your
exactly
face
right.
and they're all irrelevant. It's just going to be chaos. So
you'd have everyone filtering. Walking into each other.
Absolutely. So listen, let's just have a quick break, guys. And then after the break, I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, how your rollout is going and, you know, talk about the technology, the app you've got, and get into some of the specifics. But before that, let's just take a quick break. You're listening to Breaking Banks. We're with Bink, and we'll be right back after this short break.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Now, before we get back to talking about fintech, I want to take a quick moment to tell you about eFinancialCareers.com, one of the supporters of the show. They're the world's leading career site for financial service professionals for over 15 years. eFinancialCareers.com partners with leading financial and fintech firms, so your resume is seen by all the top companies and recruiters in the US and abroad. Now, as we all know, financial services is a very dynamic, ever-changing industry, and eFinancial Careers provides valuable resources from helpful career coaching to interview strategies and tools that keep you up to speed and well-informed with what's happening now in the industry and what it means for your career. Registration's free for financial professionals. Make sure you take advantage of all the resources they have to offer. So check them out, eFinancialCareers.com.
You're listening to Breaking Banks featuring your host, Brett King. To reach the show today, please call 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Or join the conversation on Twitter by using the hashtag Breaking Banks. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Breaking Banks. I am your host, Brett King. You can follow this conversation on Twitter and participate if you've got some questions for the Bink team. What's your Twitter ID?
Good Hello, question. Bink.
Hello, Bink. Very good. Watch for some questions on the Twitter feed. My Twitter ID is, of course, at Brett King, or you can tweet the show at Breaking Banks 1, and we'll be happy to see if we can answer your questions either on the air or, you know, follow up directly via Twitter. Okay, so let's talk a little bit more about the experience behind Bink. Now, you mentioned before you're actually, you know, in the great example of technology behavioral disruptors, like Xeroxing your photocopy or Googling, you know, your information. You talked about binking a flight. So let's get to the experience that a customer currently has. You guys aren't a wallet, but you are an app. So explain, in terms of the app experience, what does a customer do to connect with Bink? What does he see? How does he interact with the app? Give me a little bit more context around that.
Sure. Well, once the app is downloaded, it's a really simple journey, very much Uber-esque. You scan in your payment card using your mobile phone. We can scan in as many payment cards as you have. So that's nice linking of all your payment estate. You can then scan in any of your loyalty cards if you have any. You don't have to have any. And effectively, you're ready to go. You're good to go from that point. So every time you then go shopping with any one of those payment cards, you're going to be recognized. Now, if you go into a store that runs a loyalty program that you didn't even know had a loyalty program and pay with one of those registered payment cards, a join card will pop up. And it will pop up straight away saying, have a look in your Bink wallet. There's a join card for you. So when you go into Bink, you can actually see a loyalty join card saying, join our program. These are the benefits. We've pre-populated all the data for you. Just literally one click to the T's and C's. And then you're a member. Straight away, you have your digital card. You can then go shopping. So it avoids the whole journey of how do I even join a loyalty program, which, to be honest, we've just run some statistics and over 50% of people will not join a loyalty program because they just can't be bothered to either fill out the forms or they don't even know how to do it. I mean, some of the journeys.
I've been going to CVS Pharmacy here in New York now for 6 years. Every time they ask me to join the loyalty program, every time I decline. Right.
If the next time you went in there, you paid as normal, but you walked out and it said you've missed out on 3 extra bucks points, the CVS scheme, that just pops up as a notification and you one click join it.
Yeah, I'd do that for there sure. All right. Exactly. So that's a good, so you're taking the friction out of the loyalty experience end to end, joining the program, the access to rewards, knowing that there are rewards at a store, you're trying to basically address all of those friction points.
Exactly that. And then you'll see all of the points being updated real time as you get all the rewards every time you shop. So all of a sudden, there's more and more fulfillment. So every time you look into it, there's updates going through, and you can actually see your points balances building up. And the other thing that we want to improve upon, and this is a complaint that you speak to consumers about all the time, is, okay, I collect these rewards, but how do I redeem? And that's always a bugbear. And you look at some of the schemes, you know, something like Walgreens in the US, very much you can redeem at the till. And that's going to be, I think, more and more of a standard product whereby you can actually redeem at the till with your points. And there's also a lot of journeys where Hilton Honors, for example, is now you can redeem against Amazon. So you can actually take all your Hilton points.
I was actually going to say that. You know, you'll find this interesting, Mike. You don't know this, but I had a startup that failed in the mid-90s. It was called the NetExec Club. And the whole idea was executive loyalty programs, which was basically you could trade your miles from one program to another. So if you had Amex points, but you didn't have enough Cathay points, you could trade those into airline miles and get upgraded and so forth. Didn't work because I didn't really understand the business, but anyway. So once you've now been the aggregator, do you see an opportunity for more flexible arbitrage of points, or is that something you're staying away from because the schemes that you're trying to recruit?
It's an interesting one. From a consumer champion point of view, yeah, we would love to go and create a platform where you could actually trade points. And it may become relevant for retailers, actually saying, you know, someone's been in my store, they've collected points that aren't to be redeemed, and actually they don't even live near me.
Right, so, especially if you're a bunch of retailers now trying to compete against Amazon or survive against Amazon,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. There could be certainly partnerships created. I mean, there is even partnerships around already in the UK whereby you can actually take some of your Tesco points and swap it to experiences. So this does actually happen now already. We could make that process a lot simpler. I mean, just through the app, you'd be able to just do it nice and simply. You've got this many points. I want to go and have this experience. How do I get there? And you can tip in these points from these various schemes that you've got that actually amount together to be something meaningful to you that you actually want. And I think that's a really important point, because all of a sudden it means that you are interested in collecting every time you shop. So actually you start becoming more aware of where you're shopping and actually why you're shopping there.
So part of what you see is Bink's role is to educate consumers on what really is possible in respect to, you know, the fact that your loyalty should be leverageable.
I think so. The example that Greg used, you know, you walk into a retailer, you don't even know they've got a loyalty scheme.
Right.
That retailer does want you to join that loyalty scheme. That's there because they see that as a vibrant, capable communication and behavioral change channel. So we help there in the education there. I think what you then start to do is, because you see your points aggregated in one place or your preferences aggregated in one place, we can start again by taking out the friction out of some of those redemption journeys. Just having everything in one place, that starts to help do that. There are actually quite a lot of tie-ups at the moment between retailers and people in the T&E sector, and actually inside the T&E sector, you know, airline points to hotel points, etc. There's a massive opportunity for us to help consumers by taking the friction out of those existing trades, making that simpler. And, you know, we look at that as a future capability. That's, again, great value also for the players in that industry. There is, to take the kind of the Bink sort of verb notion further forwards, if you can apply an intelligence to when somebody says, I want to Bink a good or a service, what you can start doing is not just saying, okay, it's seat 61K. You can start saying, look, now is a great time, Mike, to sit in seat 61K and burn 80,000 points. And actually, if you start working with those, for example, airline schemes very well, there are certain times where they want to burn points at an accelerated manner. And that, again, would be for consumer benefit. The future opportunities
are significant. What is the best time to use your miles?
Yeah.
Best time to get a deal, optimization of that.
So you should, I mean, we can imagine a situation where what effectively, what Bink means is it's to procure a good or service in the best possible way for you. And that might be recognizing where you want to sit. That might be getting you the best deal. It might be rewarding you on your next purchase, but that's what it means. It's that augmented purchasing journey.
That'd be a good name for a book.
Augmented. Yeah.
You talked about one of your members. I don't know what you call them, customers, members?
Members,
yeah. Good. That had 17 loyalty cards.
Well, 17 payment cards.
17 payment cards. Yeah. Okay, all right. Yeah, that's crazy.
One member's got 64 loyalty cards as well.
Whoa, 64 loyalty cards. Okay, so as people start loading this up and as they walk into more stores and see, hey, there's a loyalty program here, and they start engaging, are you finding that as they engage more, that it pushes up their usage on the app? Is that sort of a virtuous circle?
I mean, even from my own personal view, it's started to influence my own behavior, which is quite surreal and sounds slightly odd. But effectively, one of the schemes in the UK, I think...
You've got to eat your own dog food. Yeah, that's what it's all about.
And I think, you know, and I actually enjoy seeing the points being updated. It's really crazy. I go in, I make sure that my loyalty is there, and it has changed my behavior.
This is not unusual to say. I mean, last week I took a flight with Cathay, and it was my flight where I renewed my diamond status, right? And I knew that. And I was like, literally got off the plane and I checked my app to see if my status had ticked over. I think that's, you know, for those of us that are worried about benefits attached to that sort of stuff, it's just like watching your Bitcoin price, right?
Yeah. I think the thing as well is what's surprising is, and one of the things I mentioned earlier was people don't value loyalty so much today. So they look at it and think the actual effort to get anything meaningful is not worth it. But actually,
because all I'm going to do is get pushed marketing stuff.
All I'm going to do is get pushed marketing, pushed emails. Yeah. And the reality is, actually, if you collect from every time you shop, it actually does mount up. And I got my wife to load up the app and do all the work on it, which is very simple. Just watched her do it, scan in her payment cards, scan in her loyalty cards. And effectively, you know, she had £75 on one of the schemes and £34 on the other. And, you know, that's over £100 on programs that she wasn't even aware of. Mm. And it's things like that that become relevant. You think, actually, you know, for people that are probably not that well off and struggling a little bit, it actually becomes really, really relevant and does make a difference.
So you don't have to worry about passwords and all that sort of stuff?
Well, this is the thing that we're working really closely with retailers on. What we want the journey to be is effectively you scan in your
card and
loyalty card, and that's it. It links in via an API straight away, pulls through your balances, pulls through your transactions, and shows you straight away. Now, given that these phones are locked and we've got locking on the app itself,
right,
you know, we think that's really safe and secure. I mean, if you go and lose your wallet, you know, you've lost your loyalty card. That can be used from that point onwards. So we feel it's a much safer way. And effectively, the other thing about it that I want to just clarify is you don't actually need your phone on you. So it's not a case of opening your app every time you shop. It's all about your payment card. You just shop with your payment card. You could look at your app just once a month just to see all the balances update. So it's very much not changing any kind of behavior. In fact, it's taking out a step in the process of having to show a plastic card. And it's just about you paying. And whether that's paying contactless, chip or PIN, or any other method, it doesn't matter.
Okay, so what about in terms of notifications I'd receive? So I've got my, you know, HSBC debit card or my, you know, Barclays Gold Visa card. I've put them in and I've got my loyalty for Boots and British Airways and those other things, you know, all plugged in. I go into a store, you know, a Sainsbury's or Tesco's or a Boots. I do my shop. I pull out my HSBC debit card. I tap to pay. What am I going to see on my phone from a bank perspective?
So from a bank perspective, the journey will be as soon as you tapped and paid, you'll get a notification on your phone saying, oh, thanks for shopping at this retailer. You've just earned 100 points. And actually also what we're doing is we're linking in vouchers as well. So we want to actually digitize vouchers. So actually, if you've got a voucher which has been sent to you via the app that you've clicked and linked to your card, that voucher will be enabled automatically just by paying.
And so you'll get a discount at the point of sale.
You'll get a discount at the point of sale.
Just because you've got it linked in the app.
Just because you've got it linked. And so that's a whole thing as well. That's massive.
That's very, very cool. Automated discounts.
Automated discounts. And the whole thing about it before, marketeers used to say, oh, we don't want this collection without recognition of pulling out our card. Now, the reality is a consumer doesn't pull out the card and look at the brand and say, what an amazing card. It's a functional piece.
Yeah.
Now, we've just taken that function out. But having a push notification from the retailer saying, oh, thank you for shopping in real time, here's what you've got, and this is the discounts we've given you. That is a really powerful impact.
So you'd see it on the register, or would it be applied retrospectively, the discount?
It depends entirely on the retailer. Okay. So we can enable them, and again, it's about us enabling them to either be pre-tender or post-tender, so it can either be in the form of a cashback or it can actually be reducing the balance at the till as you pay.
All right, cool. Very cool. So now let's come to sort of the operational, the commercial aspects of Bink. So you know, you've talked about the consumer focus, obviously, but and consumers are downloading your app, but they can also get Bink embedded in another app with. So who are your clients? Who buys Bink?
So the consumer journey is great because, you know, we're all consumers, and we notice that whenever we talk to people, we recognize what's happening there. From a retailer perspective, they're clearly a massive stakeholder in this. We're driving engagement, we're driving greater collection of data, and we're enabling them to draw better insights. And I think it touched on the point that Greg said, you know, you may download the app. And in the UK, which is, we're a business that started up in the UK, in the UK market, you can download the Bink app today. But what we really want to do is, because we're a consumer champion, we want to get to a lot of customers in a way in which they're used to interacting today. We'd almost like to take the step out of, you don't even need to download the additional app. And the way that we do that, the main go-to-market, is by partnering with select banks, select financial institutions. So what we look to do, if you take a market like the UK, we are in pilot and early rollout stage with one of the biggest banks in the UK.
Can you mention who they are?
I can't mention who they are yet.
Okay.
Soon. And it will be very soon because select customers will start to see things very soon.
Okay.
You'll
have to come back and tell us.
We will come back and tell you. But in your mobile banking app, you will see automatically your payment cards are already in there. So they will already be there. But added to that will be the Bink capability. So you'll be asked if you want to scan in existing loyalty cards. As soon as you go shopping, we'll recognize where you're shopping, and we'll raise those join cards. We'll say you've just missed out. We'll do it in partnership with that bank via a notification strategy. You'll also even see it potentially actually on the digital statement you see in your mobile app. It will say you've just been to Sainsbury's, but you've missed out. Why didn't you want to join? And when we think about go-to-market, UK and US are where we're highly active at the moment. We have strong conversations actually in South Africa and in some other territories as well. But the main go-to-market approach for us will be partnering with places where we see a high density of consumers, and we see them in a mindset of looking at what value they have and where their payment cards are already loaded, and that's with banks. So the commercial model underneath that is we work with both banks, and we also work with merchants to we charge them based on where we add value to them, where people are actively using, engaging, and enjoying the app. And from a bank's perspective, what you're really doing, and this comes back to the kind of the PSD2 piece, is you're increasing the gravity of that mobile banking app. You're giving a consumer another reason to go in there, because your bank isn't just somewhere where you look at your balances and you initiate transactions. It will also be where you see those merchant partners that you care about. That's your preference. It's not a loyalty scheme the bank has invented for Tom, Dick, and Harry. It's one that's specific for Tom. It's what you care about. So that's a big part of the rollout.
I think interestingly as well, just to add to that, is we're looking at all these different journeys about how we can add value to the customer. So one of the discussions we've got running at the moment is when someone opens their banking app and we'd be loaded via an upgrade, so all of a sudden we'd be in millions and millions of handsets. Through this upgrade, there'd be a question of, firstly, can we use your email address to scan for any loyalty cards that you may have? So we'll pre-populate straight away. So that means you don't have to scan in any loyalty cards that you may have in your wallet, because we can populate those just through utilizing your email address, which obviously the bank has. And the other point is, you know, we can look through your past 60, 90 days of history. We can then compare if you have that loyalty card in the wallet. And if you don't, we can just highlight saying, look, you spent in all these stores in the past 30, 60, 90 days. Would you like to join? We can quantify it. You would have saved this amount of money. Would you like to join? And then it's almost like, yep, I'll join that one. That's great. So all of a sudden, the utility straight away from day one will be there.
So you basically got two flavors of the app. One is the consumer app, where I can put in all of my payment cards and all of my loyalty cards and game which payment card is best with which loyalty program and vice versa, or a dedicated app around a single payment card for a bank.
That's true. The only thing I would say, in certain environments and in certain banks that we talk to in the UK, they have already moved their thinking to a slightly different place.
They're open to competition.
They're open to you adding other payment cards in there, because what they're trying to do, they're not trying to maximize in the UK share of wallet. There's a different set of economics underneath interchange, so they don't want to do that. What they want to make sure is that they are the channel. They are the engagement channel with you as a consumer. And if that means that you have to let somebody add in another payment card, then so be it. So it varies by geography. It varies almost by philosophy of those organizations. Of course, we can support either.
I think the interesting thing as well for the US, because we tick several boxes for different kind of people. So the US banks have a different economic structure. You know, share of wallet is really, really important to them. So they wouldn't envisage scanning in someone else's payment card. Right. But they're very much about promoting Bink and the functionality, because share of wallet is important. And they feel that we can actually give them that increased share of wallet, because every time you look at your bank card, you win. You effectively get your points, offers, coupons, rewards every single time you shop. And it's almost that magic around it that we're creating for these banks, that they've become really engaged over in the US as well.
It strikes me, and this is again, you know, sort of the futurist hat on, is that in the past, loyalties have been very backward looking in respect to airline miles, for example, is, you know, and it might take a week sometimes or more to get your statement updated with your airline miles saying, this is what you did and this is the points we're giving you, right? And the view of the world was that, you know, you build up your points, then you can leverage those points to buy things, get free flights, etc., get rewards and so forth. And in the US, very big on cashback on cards. You know, it's been a very big focus. Again, you know, it's retrospective in terms of its view. But those elements, the data shows that right now that accumulating points or getting cash back is not triggering increases in usage. It's not particularly effective as a loyalty mechanism. You know, certainly in the United States, it's not certainly not stimulating people to take credit cards and utilize them more, which was the whole, for in the payments side, the whole reason for a card scheme, loyalty card schemes and cashback rewards was usage. Get them using, spending more on the card. So it appears that that mechanism is starting to break down. Now, you guys, when you're talking about the experience, you're talking about experience in the retailer in real time, seeing a benefit for that at the point of sale. So how much of this is really about a shift in perspective around rewards, where customers now want rewards to be real time? They want it to be contextual. They want to know what's happening, that they're getting a benefit in the moment for being loyal, rather than saying, I might have some benefit down the track because I use this piece of plastic.
Greg does a lot of research in this space, but I think one word he said earlier is, you know, this is, it's not about retrospective points-based loyalty. It's about driving engagement.
Right.
And, you know, different schemes for different reasons have different constructs. But what we're trying to do is we're trying to engage customers with and help retailers continue to drive that engagement. And you're absolutely right. You know, for you going into that coffee shop, what was highly engaging, what you made back, what made you go back, is the fact that somebody was able to do something personalized and they were able to tell you that you would be recognized going forwards. And that's what drove the engagement. It wasn't a point. And effectively, at the root of all of that was the very challenge that person had. Could they identify you? Mm-hmm. Could they identify you on a regular basis? When everything is said and done, that is the root of what we're doing. We're enabling you as an individual, where you want to be identified for your benefit. And that's what drives the engagement.
This is actually pretty important. I want to talk about this. So, you know, one of the huge pieces of friction, the biggest piece of friction in banking remains identity, okay? KYC, onboarding, so forth. The reason we have financial exclusion today is largely because of the fact that, you know, in the United States, 25% of households are still excluded from the mainstream banking system because they don't have a driver's license or a passport, and so they can't get a bank account. So when we start thinking about this future world of payments and so forth, frictionless identity is a key part of that. So how do you guys see identity changing in the mix of this?
I think you're right. There's just, from personal experience in the UK, the inability to be able to transport my identity in a frictionless manner.
From one institution to another. You've got to start all over again.
Yeah, it is really challenging. And I spent a little bit of time last year with somebody that's working on, actually part of a UK finance working group on how do we tackle identity. And undoubtedly, in certain geographies, certain bespoke solutions may be built that will probably be finance first. But I don't think they're necessarily going to solve the exclusion piece that you've talked about. I think it's just going to increase the portability for people that are already included. That's one of my concerns in terms of the way they're tackling the problem. The way that we're approaching this to start with is we're not looking at identity at a financial KYC perspective.
Right.
But I would love...
Looking at identity as identity. Who are you?
We're building the connections. And I'd love to feel there is a ubiquity around that. And we can do that across every part of your personal experience. And maybe we then start to pull in more institutional constructs around financial services, identity, and KYC with it.
I think there's almost a phasing to it. So, you know, what we're about today is helping the consumer to win every time they shop, to make them realize and understand that loyalty and rewards are worth having, and actually getting them to collect more and more. And then the phase two for us is making it the experience. And I think certainly identity and getting the unbanked banked, you know, that'd be a fantastic challenge that we'd love to help with.
Very cool. So I do want to talk about one last piece. We've got about 4 minutes before we wrap up. But obviously there's two primary technologies that are going to change the way we conduct commerce pretty significantly. You've alluded to one of them, which is voice, agency-based commerce, voice in particular. But then in a few years' time, in probably 5 to 7 years, we're going to start to see augmented reality tech. You know, Apple's spending a lot on this right now. Yep. Google obviously has as well. So, again, surfacing relevant contextual information in a head-up display in a retail setting is going to be obviously the panacea of this from a loyalty perspective. So thinking about those two technologies, is Bink future-proof for this stuff, and how would you see Bink working in both of those technologies?
I think the answer is absolutely yes. I mean, we are creating trust-based connections for consumers. And at the moment, the device with, as you would say, limited bandwidth for us is a mobile phone to interact with that. There's a certain way of working. As we look at increasing that, and we use voice as the way we inform agent models on what we want to do, we don't want to be talking to it all the time. I don't want to say, book me a flight. By the way, my British Airways number is XYZ. Right. By the way, we want to take friction out there. That friction is all around identity. As the kind of the output bandwidth increases, whether that's a mixed reality or augmented reality solution, we talked about it earlier. You don't want to be spammed. You need to have highly contextual solutions.
So Bink is also going to be a form of effective filtering.
Absolutely right.
Definitely.
Absolutely right. I mean, the simplest way to look at it is, what we do with Bink is we listen to your preference. You tell us your preference by your behavior. And then, based on that preference,
So all you got to do is use it and we learn about you, basically. Hmm? All you have to do is use Bink and we'll learn.
Yeah, well, all that we're really doing with Bink is we're just remembering the things that you like to do. And at the opportune time, we use that information for your advantage.
Yeah. And I think, what we want to achieve is literally a global presence, because loyalty and couponing is throughout the world, to the point where you go to the till, have you got a loyalty card? No, I Bink.
Mm. Oh, how long before Amazon buys you?
Well.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty obvious as an exit strategy. But anyway.
Our retailer friends would like that.
Okay, all right. Well, I'll stay away from that then. So very interesting. So, just quickly as we wrap up, how do we find out more information about Bink and tell us about your plans for the rest of the year?
Sure. I mean, this is year for us to execute. So we're linking with more and more retailers in the UK. We'll be coming over to the US to be live, launching with a couple of the largest banks over here. We've got other territories where we're actually parallel running to go live with as well. So it's a case of being really excited about what we've delivered. We've got 75 people working for the business now and growing really fast.
Great.
Raising more money, which is always an important point. And
never-ending job of a
never-ending
CEO or co-founder.
Yeah, very much so. And, you know, you can find more information about us at bink.com or download the app if you're able to. It's, again, on the App Store, both iOS and Android. And, you know, feedback, any comments, we'd love to hear.
Great. Well, Greg, Mike, thanks for telling us about Bink.
Thank you.
Thanks for being on Breaking Banks today. It was enlightening. The future of loyalty is, it feels like we're just getting started on this, but it's going to be very, very different from where it was just a few years ago.
Absolutely.
Very exciting times. Thanks again.
Thank you.
And thank you all for joining us on Breaking Banks this week. As you know, we're a member of Provoke Media, provoke.fm. We produce a range of podcasts about finance and tech industries. Go to provoke.fm. You can check out FinTech 5, Serial Entrepreneur, our spin-off, Breaking Banks Asia. We'll have to get you guys on that show as well. And other shows that you first heard here on Breaking Banks. You can find this show and discuss our episodes on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And if you like what you heard, we've got over 200 episodes in the back catalog just on Breaking Banks alone. So you can subscribe and get access to those that back catalog, whatever you like. Please go on to iTunes or wherever it is you download Breaking Banks. Leave us a review. Give us feedback on the show today. And we always, as always, like to hear from more about our audience on what you'd like to hear next on the show. But thanks for joining us on Breaking Banks. Have a great week, and we will see you for our next show next Thursday. See you later.
Been listening to Breaking Banks with host Brett King. Please be sure to join us again next Thursday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time for more of the latest in fintech news.